You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
I'm following up last week's episode because a number of people have been in contact with me to say that they didn't fully understand the point I was making in relation to trying too hard, or more to the point that I didn't adequately explain what I meant by trying. So I'm going to start this week's episode with a question for you. Which is easier? Doing something, just doing it, or thinking about doing it? I'll give you an example, simple example. Now, people often say to me that they don't want to do my online program because they're not high flyers in business. That is possibly because a lot of the examples that I give you are from business people. That's just the nature of the business that I did myself up to the launch of the online program 6 years ago. The fact of the matter is that I would say 90% of the people with whom I work nowadays, 90% of my online program owners, are ordinary people pursuing their extraordinary lives, or actually already living their extraordinary lives as a result of taking control of their state of mind. Now, hold that thought in relation to taking control of your state of mind. Give you an example of which is easier, thinking about doing something or actually just doing it. Many, many years ago, I had a client who was the chief executive of a mid-sized company, and they had board meetings every quarter. And as the chief executive, he had to prepare his report for the board every quarter. So this is something he knew he had to do every 3 months. He would have in his diary set aside a time to start preparing his board report each quarter. And that time would come around in his diary and he'd say, well, there's another 4 weeks to go to the board. I'll put it off. I'll do it tomorrow or I'll do it next week. And then next week would come along and he would think about doing it again and he would put it off another few days. Now, at this stage, not only was he thinking about doing it, in fact, actually, he was thinking about not doing it, he was beginning to think about how inefficient and ineffective he was as a result of putting this off. He was beginning to feel guilty, which, of course, is only a thought, about how inefficient he was or how stupid he was for putting off something that he knew he needed to do every month. So now we have a pileup of thoughts in the head. Why am I procrastinating? Am I lazy? Why am I putting this off? It's something I know I have to do every month. And actually, when I do it, it's quite easy. So what's wrong with me? Am I simply inefficient, ineffective? And now I'm feeling guilty about all of those things. Consider the amount of energy that guy was wasting before he actually got around to doing his board paper at the very last minute. And when, of course, he did it at the very last minute, he found that it was done effortlessly because he was up against a deadline. Now, I've used a number of words there: ineffective, inefficient, procrastinator, guilty. They're all the bad words. And obviously, the big bad word is thought or thinking. And I've used a really good word, effortless. Consider how effortless it is when you know you have to do something and you can't wiggle out of it. I give you an example of effortlessness that everybody, even normal crazy people, have experienced. You have a flight to a sunny destination on a Saturday morning. It's a Friday morning and you arrive into work and you know there are things that you have to get done before you leave for your holidays that you've been putting off for days, weeks, or possibly even months because you think they're going to be difficult, because you think you're going to have to try hard to actually get them done. How many people have experienced just flying through the things that they know they have to get off their desk before they go on holidays effortlessly, in a whiz of flow? so that everything gets done and you amaze yourself when you realize that actually all that stuff didn't take that much time or energy at all. Now I've used another important word there, amaze. Everybody with whom I've worked at one point or another has said to me that they find that they surprise themselves or amaze themselves, or as somebody said to me a few months ago, they super surprise themselves when they actually do things that they thought would be difficult to do. There's that thought word again. And this is where trying comes from. Even when you think you're not trying, you're trying if you're not in control of your own state of mind. Let me explain. The way the normal mind works, it looks at a task that has to be performed. It thinks about it. So now the task is actually transformed into something that it actually isn't, because you begin to think about how much time it'll take, how much energy it'll take, how much focus it'll need when I'm not used to focusing or actually not able to focus at all, how many other things I prefer to do, and most importantly, whether I'm fully competent and able to do this task. Now, we all know from our previous conversations that when it comes to judging ourselves against the things that we have to do, we in our own minds are always going to fall short. Because of the way evolution designed our minds to take in learnings when we were young and impressionable, to take in negative learnings when we were young and impressionable, because one learns more from losing than one does from winning. In other words, one is more on their toes when they are looking at the glass half empty rather than the glass half full. Because of the way evolution designed the way in which we learn about ourselves, we have a very poor impression of ourselves indeed. Everybody has perceived inadequacies, the key word in that sentence being perceived. So you're never going to measure up to what you think you need from a skills and focus point of view to do what you actually have to do. Now, you won't be aware that that trying is going on in your head because it all happens automatically and subconsciously. So you'll sit down in the morning to do something, and you won't even be aware of the raging fight going on in your own head because it is so below the surface. So that is where trying starts. But then there is the trying that we are aware of, the stuff that I mentioned a few minutes ago. I prefer to be doing something else. Most people tell me they'd prefer to be doing something other than the work they're doing. And that provides us with a key insight into trying. I wish I was somewhere else. Now, not only are you fighting through the thoughts of your own inadequacy or your own perceived inadequacy, now you're fighting through the thoughts of wishing that you were on the golf course. And as we said a few weeks ago, when we talked about working smarter rather than harder, people are so crazy that when they do actually get on the golf course, they can't play golf because they're fighting through the thoughts of feeling guilty for being on the golf course when they think they should be at work. So they're never doing anything properly. They're always trying. They're always trying too hard. So first of all, let's understand this. Until you take control of your own state of mind, I told you to hang on to that thought a minute ago, until you are able to focus as a result of taking control of your own state of mind, this battle is always going to be raging deep down in your subconscious mind. And from time to time, you will be aware of it. From time to time, you'll start thinking about it and make matters worse by thinking that you're lazy or a procrastinator, or you'll end up feeling guilty. So this is always going on until you take control of your own state of mind. And they are the fundamentals of trying. I asked a question at the beginning of this podcast, which is easier, to do what you have to do or to think about what you have to do and perhaps put it off, or try doing it through the thoughts that you would prefer to put it off or do something else. The answer is absolutely blindingly obvious. But now we know, as a result of the last few minutes' conversation, that you can never just do what you need to do until you take control of your own state of mind. Now, what do I mean by taking control of your own state of mind. We are all in a state all of the time. If you grew up in Ireland, you will be familiar with the old expression, look at the state of your man, or look at the state of your woman. How apt is that particular statement? We're all in a state all the time. We're all in a state of mind all the time. We're all in an emotional state all of the time. And, you know, psychology talks about emotions as if they are something that just happens. There's only one or two true emotions, real emotions, that you will experience in life. Number one is real fear. When you are walking across the level crossing over a train track and your stiletto heel catches in the rails and there's an express train coming straight for you, you will experience real fear, or what I would call primal fear. Okay, some of you may not wear stilettos, but there you are. The other primal emotion, in other words, real emotion, is love. For those of us who have literally fallen in love, you can't help yourself. It hasn't come from thought. It is something that hits you like that express train that I mentioned a minute ago. Now, all the other things that we think are emotions, let me list a few of them, like ordinary everyday fear, like anxiety, like loneliness, like anger, like frustration, like lust. All of these things are not emotions at all. These are things that are produced by thought. Let me give you an example. We'll talk about loneliness because a lot of people tell me that they're lonely. And when they tell me that they're lonely, and by the way, these happen in one-to-one conversations, although I've had a go at a couple of people on online program owners' Zooms the odd Wednesday night when they say, I'm lonely. And I say to them, no, you're not lonely. They say, but I'm alone. I feel isolated. I said, well, let's look at the facts and let's look at the thoughts about the facts that transmute the facts into something that you think you're suffering from. You're on your own. That's a fact. You're thinking about what it feels like being on your own as compared to when you weren't on your own. So now you're thinking about being lonely. That's the thought that leads to loneliness. You're not lonely. You only think you're lonely. You may be alone, but loneliness is a thought-constructed, so-called emotion. In other words, you're in a state of mind, and that state of mind at that moment in time is one of loneliness. In exactly the same way, people often talk about how they feel that they are a victim. So something happened to them in the past. Something perhaps dreadful happened to them in the past. It happened to them once. Somebody did something to them. And ever since, they have been replaying the experience in their own head and doing it to themselves again and again and again. First of all, how mad is that? And secondly, not only how mad is that, but how does it actually translate into the way in which they go looking for other people's energy? They become energy vampires as a result of feeling victimized. Okay, something happened all of us in the past. Some dreadful things were done to most of us in the past. And obviously, there's a scale of how dreadful things are, but there's no merit in getting into that. Things were done to us in the past. We can't learn from those things for the simple reason that if we felt bad about ourselves at the time, it wasn't ourselves that were feeling bad about ourselves. It was what our so-called conceptual self felt about us. In other words, the bundle of thoughts that make up who we think we are. And of course, that bundle of thoughts, the so-called conceptual self, as cognitive psychology calls it, that so-called conceptual self is the one that is responsible for you thinking that you are inadequate, not good enough to do the task that you'd prefer not to be doing at this point in time. In other words, that conceptual self is the little bugger in your own head who is saying to you, you need to try, and you need to try hard. Okay, so that's fundamental trying, if I can put it like that. In other words, this is built into us, and it is built into us and will always hamstring you, will always tie you down, will always trip you up until you stop thinking the thoughts that put you in a state. In other words, until you take control of your own state of mind, which obviously I'll come back to again in a minute. So that's fundamental trying. There's another aspect to trying as well, and it comes from the fact that when we were all young and impressionable, we were told that we had to work hard to be a success. Now, we touched on that a few weeks ago when we talked about working smarter rather than harder. But again, it's fundamentally built into us that you get nothing for nothing in this life. In other words, you have to put in to get out. Now, that is true, but not in the way in which normal, crazy people think that it is true. They think, or perhaps you think if you're a normal crazy person listening to this, they think that I have to push, I have to shove, I have to push water up a hill, I have to do things that in actual fact I don't need to do at all to get to where I want to go. Let me give you a practical example. A program owner said to me a few weeks ago when we were talking about discipline, she said, I want to lose 5 kilos. Are you saying that the discipline I need is to do what I need to do to lose a half a kilo a week? I said, no, that's not the discipline we're talking about at all. When I talk about discipline, I talk about you ensuring that you do your meditation every morning. Now, I've mentioned meditation, obviously, and it was obvious that I was going to mention it in this podcast episode, but that is how you take control of your state of mind. She said, but I still have to do all these other things, so I have to discipline myself to eat less or to take exercise or to do all the other things that I know I need to do to lose half a kilo a week. I said, no, you don't have to think about doing any of those things at all, because for starters, if you start thinking about them, you will go into that fundamental trying that I mentioned a minute ago. You'll say to yourself, I won't go to the gym this evening. Sure, it's cold outside, it's wet outside. I'll sit down in front of the fire, make myself a cup of tea and have a few biscuits. The only discipline that any of us needs to impose upon ourselves, and it's not actually an imposition at all, is to ensure that we do our meditation every morning, because that enables you to take control of your state of mind. It enables you, as John Kabat-Zinn in the University of Massachusetts Medical School would say, meditation enables you to come to your senses. Now, that actually is a statement of simple fact. It isn't something, I'm changing my state of mind, I'm altering my state of mind. Actually, you are. But what he means when he says that is, you have 5 senses. You can see, feel, hear, smell, and taste. See what you're seeing as if you're seeing it for the first time. Really hear what you're hearing as if it is a new experience. Taste like you're actually enjoying your food rather than gulping it down. Feel, smell. These are our 5 senses. And normally we don't pay any attention to them because when we, for example, hear somebody saying something to us, we interpret it to make sense of it using the thoughts that lead to trying. And those thoughts which lead to trying lead to me feeling inadequate, lead to me misinterpreting what has been said to me, lead to me automatically reacting to what I think has been said to me. So we need to actually come to our senses. In doing so, we do take control of our state of mind. And that is the only discipline that we need. I need to meditate every morning. Because when I meditate every morning, the parts of my brain that enable me make my moment-to-moment choices are actually restructured. So therefore, when it is wet and cold on a Wednesday evening, I will choose to go to the gym. When I am walking through the aisles of the supermarket, I will choose the healthy options off the shelves rather than buy the usual muck that has made me overweight in the first place. The other aspect of this thought-fueled trying comes from the fact that if you want to lose 5 kilos, you think you have to do it one step at a time. Let me put that another way. And whatever your project is, and as I said last week, it could be the big project, the grand project, the project of your life. Say you are at position A in your life or your career or your relationship or lack of relationship or whatever you are considering or focusing on at this moment in time. Say you're at point A and you'd love to be at point H. Now, the thinking mind will tell you that I need to take steps one at a time to go through B, C, D, E, F, and G to get to H. That isn't how the doing mind works. It isn't how the part of your brain that makes these choices for you the supermarket choices that I mentioned a moment ago, it isn't how that part of your brain works. As we've said a number of times recently, that part of your brain enables you to achieve your objectives because you've seen yourself achieving your objectives, because you believe your objectives are achievable fundamentally deep down, because, and this is what beliefs actually are in mechanical terms within the brain, because you have psychological snapshots, pictures of how it will feel when you have achieved your objective. Let me put that in the words that I used in last week's episode when I talked about the internal compass. If you give your internal compass the coordinates of where you want to land, the outcome that you want to experience, the part of your brain that makes your little choices for you will enable you just do what you need to do and no more to get you to H if you're at A right now. And that'll happen in a synchronistic way. In other words, things will be presented to you. You will stumble across the right pieces of information along the way, in the right way, at the right time. You will meet the right people who either have information for you or who will provide you with a signpost to move in the right direction, so that you effortlessly move from A to H. And it'll probably happen, because this is the way the subconscious mind or the subcortical brain actually works in a synchronistic way with the universe itself. It'll probably happen so that you dance from A to Y to H. And you'll discover that there were only two steps involved. Let me reiterate a story that I mentioned to you a few weeks ago in relation to weight loss, because that's the matter I mentioned a couple of minutes ago. I had a conversation with a client on the telephone, and the very first thing she said to me was, "I'm obese." I never met this lady. I never saw her. So I don't know whether that was an actual fact or whether she was a little overweight and she just thought she was obese, because we will always exaggerate and amplify the bad things that we think about ourselves, be that as it may. We talked for an hour and a half, and I never mentioned her weight in the course of our first conversation at all, to the point where at the end of that conversation, she said to me, "You never picked up on what I said at the beginning of this conversation." I said, "Oh, I did, but there's no merit in pouring your energy into thinking about that. What you need to do is make the right little choices to ensure that you end up achieving what you would really love to achieve." She said, "So what do I need to do?" I said, "Meditate, meditate, meditate, because it enables you to come to your senses." A few weeks later, we had a conversation. She had traveled the length of the United Kingdom to visit her son, who was studying in university in Edinburgh. And she said, "Normally, I would take that trip by loading up the passenger seat of the car with all manner of treats for myself, sweets, chocolates, etc., etc." She said, "I arrived back from my weekend round trip to Edinburgh and realized that I'd forgotten to buy the sweets and the chocolates. The passenger seat was completely empty. Normally, it would be like a rubbish tip." She said, "What did you do to me?" I said, "I did nothing to you at all." I said, "Through meditation, you have started making the right little choices." So we now know that trying comes from a fundamental flaw in the way in which our brain evolved. That's at its most fundamental level, the ordinary trying that goes with trying to do what we have to do through the fog of repetitive thought every day. That's what makes life difficult for us. That's where the struggle comes from. That indeed is where stress comes from. And as we've said before, stress will kill you. And I'm not making that up. The World Health Organization believes that stress will be the biggest killer of people in the developed world in the 21st century. Notice I said the developed world. There are tribes wandering around the Amazon basin who have the kind of lifestyle that people in New York would love. That actually, I'm quoting a direct piece of research in relation to what I've just said there. Stress is a thought, and the thought comes from trying and wondering whether I have to try so hard that I'm not capable of doing what is being demanded of me, which leads to the triggering of the stress response, which leads to cortisol being pumped into my system, which closes down my immune and digestive systems and pushes up my heart rate, my blood pressure, and pushes up the production of fatty LDL cholesterol in my cardiovascular system. Stress will kill you. And stress, if you're suffering from it every day, and you may not even be aware of it because it is fundamental trying that actually leads to the low level background drip, drip, drip of everyday stress. So you may not even be aware of it. You may think it's normal to feel this way. Normal to feel that sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach when you go into work every morning. Normal when you wake up and there are four screaming kids who, despite whatever you do, are always going to keep screaming at you. You think it's normal. It's killing you. And it's killing you because you haven't taken control of your state of mind. So trying, first of all, comes from a fundamental flaw in the way in which our brains evolved. Stress then comes from us comparing what we have to do against whether we think we're up to doing it. All the other stuff that we think, you know, that I prefer to be somewhere else than doing what is being imposed upon me as a task now, all that other stuff just comes from the ordinary, everyday, automatic way that our thinking minds work. You have to stop thinking. Now, it's actually a lot easier than that sentence would suggest. You have to start being present. Because once you start being present, you'll stop thinking. So many people over the years have said to me, oh, when the big bad thoughts come my way, I have this imaginary baseball bat and I whack the thoughts out of the park. Or other people say to me, oh, I nudge the thoughts away or I push them away when they arrive. You don't need to push away something that isn't there. You don't need to whack something out of the park that doesn't exist. Thoughts are only imaginings in the back of your own brain, to be specific, the posterior cingulate cortex at the back of your brain. They're not real until you give them life by paying them attention. So you don't have to stop thinking. All you have to do is starve your thoughts. And you starve your thoughts by paying attention to something else. And what better to pay attention to than the reality of the here and now? When you're paying attention to the here and now, you will start making different choices. Let me explain. When you're using your mind normally, the brain operates on automatic pilot. Moment to moment, we are making choices that lead to, for example, feelings like I'm feeling lonely, or I'm feeling stressed, or I'm feeling down, or I'm feeling blue. As somebody said to me recently, God help us. When I'm using my mind automatically, those feelings are going to happen automatically as a result of automatic thought, as a result of which I make automatic choices. We have to make choices moment to moment. We're not aware of that, generally speaking, because they happen for us automatically. As I said a minute ago, stress is a choice. Stress is an automatic choice. In fact, it is the most automatic choice built into us. But just because it's automatic and it's the most automatic choice built into us doesn't mean we can't make a different choice. But the only way you will make a choice is by deliberately making a choice to pay attention to what's going on now rather than to pay attention to what you think is going on in your own head, which is colouring your life. It's probably a bad analogy. It's probably making your life look very grey indeed. You cannot, listen to me, you cannot make that choice unless you have become adept at making the choice to pay attention to the here and now when it doesn't matter, so that you can pay attention to the here and now in the cut and thrust of your everyday life when it actually does matter. In other words, we meditate in a nice quiet place, quiet space, safe space, so that we begin to restructure the brain, the part of the brain that makes our little choices for us, so that it comes under our own control rather than under the control of the automatic pilot. So, for example, when we're meditating, we choose to pay attention to how it feels when we breathe. Now, I've made the distinction before between paying attention to your breath and paying attention to how your breath feels. Just to elaborate on that for a very brief moment, people think that breathing meditations are exercises where you focus on your breathing. They're not. Breathing meditations are exercises where you use your breathing to focus, an entirely different thing. So what you learn through, for example, that breathing exercise that I've just mentioned is that you learn to focus. You learn to hear what's going on around you. You learn to notice, experience, and appreciate the feelings in your own body because they're real. In fact, they're the realest feelings that you will actually get in touch with in this life of yours. That enables you restructure the part of your brain that makes your little choices for you. If you're distracted during meditation, and it is inevitable that you will be, for example, a car goes flying past outside and you say to yourself, well, that fella's driving far too quickly, you know, which is obviously a thought. That thought will lead you in all kinds of different directions if you let it, but only if you let it. So if you are distracted by an external force during meditation, you make a choice to come back to what you had decided to focus upon in that exercise. If you're distracted by your own thoughts, well, that's inevitable, or it's inevitable at the outset. It's inevitable for the first few months, probably, that you will be distracted by your own thoughts. And by the way, 30 years later, from time to time, you will be distracted by your own thoughts when you're meditating. So we don't need to get ourselves tied up in worrying about why is my mind racing when I've been meditating for 30 years. It happens to me. It only happens to me for a second. Why? Because I make a choice to come back to that which I had decided to focus upon. Now, that is the discipline that I was talking about earlier on, the discipline of sitting down to meditate every morning and the discipline of choosing whilst meditating to pay attention to that which I have decided to focus upon. We meditate to be cool, calm, and collected while we're meditating so that when we're not meditating in the cut and thrust of our day, we're cool, calm, and collected. We know what's going on. We won't react. And we know what little choices to make, so we do the right thing in the right way to get us from A to H, as I said a few minutes ago. This is what taking control of your state of mind is all about. This leads to an end to trying. You're not going to have to try anymore when you're in that clear zone, when you're in what athletes call being in the zone, when you're in what the University of Chicago calls flow. You're not going to have to try anymore. You're not going to have to think about what you have to do anymore. We covered that in last week's episode. I'm not going to do it again. You don't have to push yourself. You don't have to even have a to-do list. We talked about that a few weeks ago, and I'll come back to that next week, okay? You don't have to have a to-do list. What you need to do is be moved by the feeling of what is right for you to do right now, because not only have you restructured that part of your brain that you make your little choices with when you meditate regularly, you get in touch with your own intuition. So you'll know what feels right, and you'll also know what feels wrong. To say, to do, to not say, to avoid doing. Everything becomes very easy. So instead of pouring your energy into trying, you pour your energy into doing. And that makes a world of difference. We talked about spit in last week's episode. Towards the end of last week's episode, a couple of people said to me, that wasn't a very nice analogy. But as I said to you last week, I don't care. I was making a point. When you're pouring your energy into what you're doing, you're pouring that bucket of water that we talked about last week out into the universe, and you're going to get the ripple effect whereby the universe will respond to you investing in your own life, in the here and now, as a result of which you will experience opportunity, which becomes synchronicity when it's allied to the way in which you've set your mind. And you will embrace those synchronicities and do just what you need to do, and it'll be completely effortless. The choice is yours between trying and effortlessness. I come back to that in a moment. Just before I do, I've mentioned energy. You are energy. I was going to say that is all you are. That is everything you are, because it means that you're an integral part of the flowing energy of the universe. If you're using your mind normally, your energy is being poured into the thoughts that lead to trying. If you have restructured the part of your brain that makes your little choices for you, you are going to pour your energy into your own life. You're going to turn up to your own life in the here and now. And you'll do what you need to do, and it'll be effortless. And you will surprise yourself. You will amaze yourself. You will super surprise yourself by doing things that you thought you couldn't do. Thought being the operative word. As I said a minute ago, it's a binary choice. It's a really simple choice. Am I going to try or am I going to do? Am I going to be lost in my own thoughts or am I going to be present? Am I going to be present now or am I going to let my thinking mind run away with me? Now is when you have to make that choice. And you are not going to be able to make that choice unless you're meditating regularly, which enables you get used to making this fundamental choice. More than that, you're not going to be able to choose to be in flow until you have experienced flow. And at the outset, the only way you can do that for yourself is through meditation. Now, I'll elaborate on that in some other episode, because flow sometimes just happens, even the craziest of people, but it happens randomly. We're talking about turning yourself on deliberately so that you choose to be in flow most of the time every day. Now, I didn't say most of the time some days, I said most of the time every day. Now, isn't that worth disciplining yourself every morning to spend a few minutes meditating, restructuring your brain and changing your life? You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willie-hughes.com.